Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Two and Under podcast. Hasn't been the happiest podcast over the last few weeks. There's been some bad results, some stuff to talk about. We're here to talk about the entirely predictable 2-0 defeat to Manchester City in the FA Cup. We'll talk about what it means for the season. We'll talk a little bit about the match, but not too much because there wasn't really too much to say about it. We'll talk about a little bit of the reaction as well, which has happened on social media and whether that is actually reflective of what the sort of general fan base opinion is, which it probably isn't, but we'll get into that. I've got Dimmy. How are you, Dimmy?
Not too bad, mate. Just we're getting into a bad routine at the moment. It's sort of back to the bad old days where we're used to losing again, which is for about 2 years we weren't used to losing. We just never lost games. We were drawing and winning. And now all of a sudden we're just on this perpetual sort of seems like a losing streak consistently. But that's all right. We'll talk about it in a bit. But it could be a lot worse, put it that way.
It could be a lot worse. And we are here as ever to help keep the perspective and try and put a bit of context around what's going on at the club at the moment, because it's really not as bad as some would have you think. And with that in mind, Dimmy, the first question I'm going to ask you is, as NUFC Twitter would have us believe, is Newcastle's season over with this defeat?
Well, factually, it's not over because we've got another 2.5 months of the season, another 10 games to go. So, look, it's not over in terms of what we still can somewhat achieve in terms of finishing in the top seven. Obviously, the cup is something that we were striving for. And, I mean, everyone knew when we drew Man City, I don't think there was a Newcastle fan anywhere around the world who thought we're going to win this game. We all thought it'll take either a miracle or penalty shootout or something like that, something freakish for us to win the game, given our form and our squad. So the cup was never going to be a real avenue for us to sort of keep the good vibes going. And there's still 2.5 months of the season to go, 10 games to go, and we're still only 3 points as it stands before West Ham play Villa later today. We're still only three points behind seventh, which is European football. So I think that's a big enough carrot for us to continue going and not pack the season in and just accept mid-table mediocrity.
Yeah, Eddie was asked this question as well. I don't know if it was before this game or after it, but it must have been after because he just said, absolutely no way. Like he would say that, you know, but he's not. The players are still fighting. We want to try and get some form together. It's probably important to try and pick things up before the end of the season as well, just to raise the mood around the place a little bit and give us a bit of positivity going into the summer and the new season. It's going to be here before we know it, the summer, and there's a lot to do. We'll be talking all about that as we get closer to that, I think. But I think this cup draw just deflated everyone, didn't it? We had the high of Blackburn and that crazy penalty shootout, which we don't win penalty shootouts ever, pretty much. So we had that, and then you just knew, like, I thought we were going to get Liverpool, you know. It's just, you couldn't have wished for a worse draw. And our cup draws this season have just been absolutely
disgusting,
ridiculous. And that's one of the big mitigation, because it's not just having hard teams to play, but it's the pressure it puts on the players, how hard they have to work, all the work they have to do without the ball. To have to play the treble winners four times in one season, I think that's pretty unlucky. So it was kind of a low-key build-up to this game, just because I think nobody expected we were gonna get anything. I think most people thought it was going to go the way it did, with a pretty routine defeat. But have you ever known such a sort of unenthusiastic build-up to a cup quarterfinal?
I think there was I think it was COVID year or around COVID time. I think we played City as well at St. James's Park at home, and there was no fans obviously in the crowd, so there wasn't that sort of build-up in terms of atmosphere and everything like that. And I reckon that game was 2-0 maybe or 3-0 that day as well. And I mean, I think previously to that game we played West Brom, we had a big win away at West Brom. The vibes were good because we were building a cup run finally. We were in a quarter final, and then bang, you draw Manchester City. And it just seems like any time we think we can get some sort of glimmer of a cup run or a glimmer of something in this season, we've just been smacked down. And it's one thing being able to play Man City with our full capabilities, with our full team. We're probably still not up to that level, or probably nowhere near that level. Mm. But with a half fit squad and a team who's out of form, and we're just no match. And it is, unfortunately, that this morning was a throwback to the old Rafa days and even the Steve Bruce days, in terms of going to these big clubs and just trying to hang on and hold on, and maybe you'll fluke something.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the system tweaks and what he actually did, because it was a bit different with the system, and it did work to a degree. But whenever you play Man City, you have to have luck on your side, and yeah, you have to take your chances. You know, like any team has to do that. And that didn't happen for us today. So it's kind of funny to be sitting here saying the system worked and we were quite good. We only had one shot on target in the whole game. So it just shows you the levels. I think City could have clicked up another couple of gears if they'd really had to. It was a training exercise for them, which is pretty disappointing, really, like with the after the hopes that we came into the season with. The fact we've already beaten them once this season as well, it would have been a completely different matter this if it was at St. James's Park. I think even with the injuries we've got, we still had some good players out there. So I think with home crowd, we could have had a more of an effort at this game. And the other thing as well about it is, even if we'd have reached the final of the FA Cup, we probably would have got into Europe through that as well. So that would have been another big bonus to that. But it wasn't to be, as it often isn't whenever you draw to play against Man City. So it was a bit of an unenthusiastic build-up. We're kind of getting to the point with Eddie Howe as well now, where people are picking holes in everything he says in press conferences before games. The tide's not turning against him from the general fan base, but it is a bit on social media. And he said a few interesting things in the press conference before this game. I just want to touch on them for a moment and then see whether that kind of tallies with what he actually did with his team selection and his system. So first of all, he was talking about Sean Longstaff playing with an injury and said that he's had to have injections to play. He said that it's my job to protect the players because the lads are giving everything. And that's just a kind of normal thing you expect managers to say. And then he said something which is going to be used against him a lot, I think. He said, the biggest tool I have is in my team selection. If you're not performing well, you come out of the team. So that's what he said. He did say that. But there was another part to that, which a lot of people are just ignoring now. They're pretending that the next part of it didn't happen. So he said that. And then he said, now that's been challenged this year because I've not had the array of options I would have liked. So with that in mind, how do you tally what he said? Because he came out swinging, really. He was really quite strong about this. And he didn't have to do that, I don't think. He didn't have to say what he did and to give such an impassioned defence or to explain his decisions in such detail. He wouldn't usually do that. I think he's usually more cagey. But how do you tally what he said pre-game with his subsequent team selection? In particular, Byrne and Longstaff, they're the current scapegoats of the month. Perhaps fairly, you know, I think there's fair criticism of them. But yeah, he did play them after he'd said that about dropping players out of form. So how do you sort of work that one out in your head?
It's interesting. I've come to the realization that anything that Eddie says in his press conferences is probably not true, because he's he's been saying a lot of things at press conferences about people's injuries and, oh yeah, we're not sure when this guy's going to be back and next minute he's on the bench, or Gordon was expected to be really badly injured and then he's starting. So it's hard to sort of pass that fact that he doesn't really tell the truth in press conferences, but he has changed his tune, I think, in the last couple of months. He has been a bit more combative at press conferences. I mean, when the Dan Byrne questions came at him a month or so ago about his performances, he sort of snapped back saying, oh, I didn't even realize there was criticism. I didn't think Dan Byrne was playing poorly. So he's obviously he's not stupid. He's aware that there's talk out there about certain players in the team. But I think Eddie Howe, he's shown in his three seasons that he's going to play players that he trusts, and he will stand behind them no matter what. Doesn't even matter if they're not playing well or they're not in form. he very rarely drops a player for poor form. And even when a new player comes into the team, we saw that with Bruno, we saw it with Gordon last year. He gives them a big a big build up to get into the starting 11 and sort of gets them to build his trust. And it obviously seems Longstaff and Byrne in particular have his trust, and he's seen what they've done for him in the past. So he's happy to back them, even though they're not playing at their best. And in Longstaff's case, he's not fit enough. But it is a bit frustrating hearing that about, especially Longstaff, that he's not fit and he's having an injection just to train and play. Well, I know we don't have many options, but we do have young Miley on the bench who for 2 months was starting every single game. Now, unless he is also injured that we don't know about, or his fitness levels or his sort of injury risk is at that point where he can't be starting games, then maybe we say there's no other option. But yeah, it doesn't really marry up. But I try to take what Eddie says with a grain of salt at press conferences, because a lot of the time he's just trying to deceive us, I think, or deceive the media.
Yeah, and he did say about Miley as well that he needs protecting. Like, should not have played 25 games season. Nah. So he's played a lot more football than he ideally should have done. But you're right, he's there as an option. And it does happen where players get, you know, players who are in bad form, because Longstaff's in bad form. Let's not sit here and insult everyone's intelligence. And Byrne has not been in the best form, although I don't think that's actually been as bad as has been made out sometimes. He scored, but they both scored important goals at Fulham in the Cup, and then Byrne was man for match in the Villa game. So I think that's gone a bit overboard at times, and clearly Lewis Hall is not trusted to play left back, and Matt Target's coming back from injury. Tino is out after getting kicked all over the place at Stamford Bridge as well. So let's just have a look at what the team actually was. It was 2:30 in the morning when this team came out. And I was awake at that point. I'd just been up with one of my kids. So, I had to double look at this a few times and check what was going on. So we did have basically four centre backs on the pitch. If you count Byrne as a centre back. And then Murphy was up there on the graphic right below Dubravka. So it was obvious he was playing at right back or right wing back. Bruno, Longstaff and Willock, and then Gordon and Isak, who were clearly going to be up in like a two setup. So Eddie, one of the things he's criticised for is not changing his system. He did change it in this game, and he went to five at the back, or wing backs, if you want to put it that way. When Keegan spoke to Simon Hill the other day, Simon told Keegan that sitting back would not work against Man City and would be best off pressing them and attacking them a bit. So what do you think the logic was behind this team selection? And did we actually sit back and try and soak pressure up, or did you see something else from the system and the formation we played when the game started?
The logic, I think, was Eddie wanted to get the game for the second half, in my opinion. I think he wanted to get the game to an hour and be in the game, either level or down by maybe one goal, and then perhaps change it back to four at the back and bring on maybe Miggy, bring on Anderson and for half an hour and see if he can pinch the game. I don't know why we chose this game to play the five. It was the first time since Brentford, his first home game, that we actually had five at the back. It is frustrating to see that team sheet, to be honest, because you wake up in 4 a.m. or whatever time it was, the game kicked off here in Victoria, and you see that lineup and you think that's a rough lineup. That's old school Rafa away or Steve Bruce teams away, and it just didn't give you any sort of confidence. Judging by the game, how it went, though, in the first half, we did try to press up and we were stepping up on them and trying to catch them out. But again, Man City are a world-class team, and it's not like they have never seen a press before. So pressing them is not real, unless you do it coordinated and unless you've practiced it over and over again, it's not going to work, because if one player doesn't do it properly, then they're out. And if you look at the team that we've got at the moment, we're not playing with 10 outfield players in great form. And we're clearly this morning, we're experimenting with a five at the back that we haven't done for 2.5 years. So it wasn't really going to work the pressing with that formation. I think more Eddie was trying to get the game into some sort of parity or some sort of give us a hope with half an hour. Similar to what happened at the start of the season where, if you remember, we're 1-0 down. He brought on Isaac. He brought on maybe Barnes. And we went for it, but we happened to cop the second goal straight away when those changes were made. And that was sort of the end of that. So I think that was his thinking. He didn't want to get blown out in the first half like Arsenal, and the game would have been done.
Yeah, it's a pretty demoralizing way of going about football game, isn't it? And I remember when Rafa did this and when Bruce did it, and it was so depressing just knowing that you were just going to go and watch us, you know, basically get pounded for a full game. But it didn't really happen like that. We did start quite brightly, but we then conceded goals with our first two shots on target. So they were big deflections, which is unlucky in one sense, but there was also a bit of backing off going on, and you know we allowed the shots to come in. So is that unlucky, or is it just bad defending, or is it a bit of both?
It's probably both. I think, first of all, Bernardo Silva does it to us every single time, so I'm not sure why we're backing off him every time we play against Manchester City. So that was the first problem. We're allowing him to come into the 18-yard box. That's the first issue. But, I mean, even the technique to block those shots was poor from both Botman and Byrne. And obviously it's unlucky for the ball to just loop into the net. But when you're playing these teams, when you're playing Manchester City away or Liverpool or the big clubs away from home, you've got to get everything absolutely spot on. And any sort of bad luck going against you, you're completely juicy fruited, and it's the game's going to be done. And I mean, for Man City, virtually their only two shots in the first half an hour to score like that did, I think not only obviously gave them the confidence to say, oh, this is going to be a training drill for an hour, it would have demoralized us to no end, because we had a plan to try and contain them, press them, and maybe pinch something on the break, and sort of as the game went on, bring on some substitutes. But to cop two goals the way we did, I think that would have completely ruined the team morale.
As if playing Man City at 0-0 is not hard enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You're then 2-0 down away, and it's not going to happen, is it? I think
no.
It wasn't like the Arsenal game where we kind of gave up in that game, and there was very obvious signs that the players were they just phoned it in that day. It was really bad, really, really bad performance, and it was very disappointing, the attitude and application. But it wasn't like that. I think they tried, they did, and Alex Isak's got a hard job up front, kind of on his own. He had Gordon up there with him a bit today as well, but it's a hard gig he's got at the moment. When he's got his chances, he's got to take them, and he didn't. He missed the one. Well, it was a good save, but he actually did well to get his foot over that one to get a good shot on target.
Yeah.
The second one was the pass from Miggy, which if he'd have got, he didn't even get a shot away, but that was quite a good chance by his standards as well. So you never know how things would have turned out, but I suspect City would have just turned it up a notch.
Well,
I think that's the thing.
If you remember the game at St. James's Park, though, it wasn't as if we were having great chances that day. Both goals from Isak and Gordon were a long ball over the top, and they were just individual brilliance. And probably playing Isak and Gordon up top, we probably thought our hope is going to be the long ball over the top. Let's defend with what we've got. And if we get that one half chance, these guys may be able to make something happen. So unfortunately, playing like that with that smaller margin of error, it's not a recipe for success. And obviously, Isak is a great player. He's a wonderful finisher. He scored a great goal against Chelsea last week, but he's not going to score every single chance he gets. And we can't expect he's going to score 100% of chances. Not even Haaland scores 100% of chances. So we need to be giving him more opportunities to put the ball in the back of the net and giving us more opportunities to score. And the way we set up and played wasn't sort of conducive of that.
Yeah. I might get a bit of I might get, if people hear me say this, they'll think I'm stupid and they'll think I'm, you know, I've lost my mind. But I don't actually find Manchester City's style of football very interesting or very attractive to watch. I know that they're obviously the best team in the world, but the kind of pass it into submission, the sort of keep the ball like moving from side to side, and it's all just a bit sterile to me. Like, and maybe the fact that they haven't really got a huge, they've got a huge fan base, but they're not kind of massive, you know, loud at the stadium and things as well.
Rubbish.
And they just sort of go there and expect to win heavily because that's what they do. So they're kind of suffocated, don't they, Man City? And it's a bit like, I guess, you know, when Pep was at Barcelona, it's a similar style of football, but then they had Messi to, you know, make things a bit interesting when you were watching them. So I'd rather watch, like, I'm just one person, my club's never won anything, but I'd rather watch sort of quicker, more direct kind of football. That's sort of the Premier League, what you kind of brought up on the Premier League, you know, with the Premier League. So I don't know, they're just a bit, I just find them a bit boring, really. You probably think that's a load of nonsense, do you?
Well, I'm a big fan of Barcelona and the way they've played. And I mean, Barca weren't playing the way Man City play. Obviously, it's similar in terms of keeping the ball, but Barcelona had Messi and Barcelona had Xavi, Barcelona had Iniesta.
Mm.
The combinations that Barca did, the triangles are all around the pitch. City don't play that way. And it's obviously a little bit different. City's got the big target man, Haaland, up front, who's sort of the unicorn of everything. So there's differences. And I think City have a tendency, when they're in front, especially to really, really slow the pace of the game down and sort of just look to keep the ball. And the way they defend is keep the ball away from the opposition. And they do it really well. And it's a good way to play for from their perspective when they're ahead. But you're right. When you're watching them play and their only sole objective is just to keep the ball and pass the ball sideways, it's not the best to watch.
But then they can do it the other way as well. Like in that 3-3 we had with them last season, they gave as good as they got in a sort of counter-attacking, quick sense. So they can do it. Pep's just a master, isn't he? He's a master coach. He's got different plans and he does different things in different games. So like last season when he started doing the John Stones in the box midfield thing, and it was like, what's this? And then everyone's copying it. And he's just a trailblazer, isn't he? And it's probably going to be they're going to dominate. Probably they might not win the league this season, but they probably will. Let's be fair, but they're going to dominate for as long as he's there. So hopefully for us, when we do finally get anywhere near that level consistently, which might not happen for a while with the financial restrictions we're under, but hopefully he's long gone and they've had a bit of a drop off because football's cyclical as well. Like clubs can't stay at the top forever. And when they've had a manager like that, this probably will be a drop off, but we're probably a long way from that at the moment. The rest of the game was just a bit of a training exercise.
Yeah,
it was the middle of the night. It was hard to pay too much attention to what was going on, but nothing really was. Is there anything else you wanted to pick up or that you'd noted from the game? Or were you kind of dozing at the same time as well?
Yeah, it was hard to watch at 5:45 in the morning when City are just dominating the ball and you know you're going to lose the game, but you know you have to watch the next 40 minutes of us losing and not having the ball. So, look, I thought the substitutes were quite decent. I thought Anderson, he sort of looked lively. Lewis Hall had some nice touches as well. And we not that we were putting them under any sort of pressure sort of thing, but we did have a bit more about us for about 5 or 10 minutes when they first came on. And I really want to see Elliot Anderson get some game time now. Now that he's getting his feet wet and he's getting his match fitness back, he was a star of the preseason for us. And I made a big prediction in one of our preseason pods that I said if he was going to be pushing towards the England squad by the end of the season, that's how good I thought he looked and how good I think he can be. And I'd like to think that he's going to get a lot of game time in the next 10 games. And we lack a player like him who's a little bit different, who can take dribble against the player, but he can hit a pass, he can score. I really hope he gets an opportunity in the last 10 games. And perhaps that could be the answer to our midfield problems. If we can get someone with a bit more energy and guile like he has, that may just unlock the rest of our midfield sort of midfield sluggishness.
Yeah, and I saw a comparison with him that he's a bit like Ross Barkley. You know, Barkley's been in good form this season for Luton. And they do have that kind of similar style, good at dribbling. Yep. Good at progressing the ball forward. You know, they're quite creative. He was just so unlucky with his injury after he had such a good preseason. And there was quite a few calls for him to start the first game against Villa as well. Yep. We thought he might start instead of Tonali. But he hasn't even scored a goal for Newcastle yet, Anderson. So I think that's definitely on the agenda before the end of this season. And yeah, you're right. Like, it's going to be, it was good. Like, and it was good to see Lewis Hall come and have some touches as well. So that the future with those young players is positive. And I think we'll come on to talk about, what the objective is for the rest of this season. And I think a lot of it is going to be preparing or starting to prepare for next season, maybe with a bit of the pressure off. Obviously, we've still got Europe to go for, but we've got 10 games to go then, 30 points to play for. We are 7 points off Man United in sixth, and we're 3 points off West Ham in seventh. Yeah. The Europe spaces are probably going to go down seventh this season. I think I saw because West Ham win in Europe, it means that fifth is more likely to get a Champions League spot now.
Yeah.
The fixtures are quite good. We've got most of these teams around us to play at home, and we've got Man United away. But other than that, we've got all of our hard fixtures on paper out of the way now for this season. So we've got two home games coming up against West Ham and Everton. So win those two and things could look a lot brighter. But what do you think the objective is now for the club for the rest of this season, the last 10 games? We've got 2 weeks off now as well. We're going to go to Dubai first and have a bit of a break. But what do you think the plans and the target is for the rest of the season there?
I think the target has to be seventh, to be honest. I think West Ham are still obviously in European competition and they're going to be fully focused on that. I think there's a big opportunity for us to push for that seventh spot. And we just need something, I think, to hang our hats on for this season. We, as bad as we are at the moment and as bad as it looks, we haven't been this bad the entire season. People forget we went on a run. I reckon it was around October to end of November. We won about 7 or 8 out of 10 games. And we were right up in the top 4 or 5 in the Premier League. And it just so happened that we had all the injuries then, and then December happened, and that sort of December has sort of derailed our whole season. And since then, we haven't really recovered back to a consistent vein of form. We've been picking up draws, a couple of wins here and there, but we haven't really found our feet since December. So you'd hope this two-week break can sort of reset the minds, reset our bodies, and really target these last 10 games and hopefully try and target 6, 7, 8 wins even. And that should be plenty to get in the top seven. And if we can end this season finishing top seven, two quarter final appearances in the cup, I mean, you can't be too disappointed. Obviously, we wanted to progress in the Champions League. We sort of not threw it away, but we were right in that Champions League qualification picture until the last minute, really, against AC Milan. And everyone knows, obviously, the injury situation. We don't need to go on and on about that. But I think it's important we finish the season with some sort of good vibes, because the vibes at the moment, not only on the socials, but I think, obviously, on the terraces and everywhere around the club, up and down the country, everywhere around the world, is not great. And pressure is coming for Eddie and the club, and a lot of that is probably coming from down south and external more so than internal at the club. But we want to make sure that the questions aren't going to be continued to be asked. We want to make sure that there's stability at this club, because we saw when everyone's pushing in the same direction, club, fans, board, everybody, that we can do whatever we want to do, really. We finished fourth last year and we fully deserved to be in the Champions League. So I think it's vital for us to finish this season well and not let it peter out and finish 8th, 9th, 10th and give us sort of a bit of taste in our mouth for all our hard work, for all our sort of high marks this season, to not have anything to hang our hats on. I think it'll be a hard one to take.
Yeah, and we've got a good opportunity with the West Ham and Everton games. Win those two, we probably will be back in 7th probably, and everyone will feel a lot happier about life. So, the club was on such an upward trajectory for the takeover obviously boosted everyone, but performances were still not good up until January, really, of that that season.
Leeds
was a huge
my wedding win. Night.
Yeah, your wedding night, exactly, which you managed to watch in the bathroom, didn't you? So, plastic fan. but the trajectory at the club was so positive, and it's been constant up since that Leeds game, really. Like, there's just been good news after good news. We were signing players. We took the momentum from the escape from relegation, which was not even a relegation battle in the end. We took that into the next season. Obviously qualified for the Champions League. got to a cup final. It was just constant positive news all the time. The atmosphere around the club was really good. I think we knew it wasn't going to continue like that forever. And then we had probably the Tonali situation was really troubling for us. And then all of the injuries that happened, we couldn't really afford to buy anyone in January. The kind of noises of caution from the club around FFP, the fact that the Premier League keep putting in new rules, which are designed to, they are targeted at us. They would be targeted at any club who was in our position, but that's made things a bit harder as well. And with the form's dropped off on the pitch, so it started to feel a bit less positive. And it can be hard sometimes to try and keep perspective and look at the overall big picture. But I don't find that too difficult to do. I do when I'm talking to people on social media, but I'm generally positive still about the state of the club. I was just talking to someone before on social media, you know, since the takeover, we've qualified for the Champions League. We've been in a cup final. We've been in two cup quarterfinals, and we're very, very safe in mid-table now. So it's not all bad. It really isn't. And we do need to get to the end of the season. But like I said, there's still an opportunity in these last 10 games to get a bit of positive momentum back, to give some of the younger players an opportunity to come in and stake the claim for next season. And also the players who are there should be thinking, I've got to try and fight to keep in the squad next season. There probably isn't going to be a huge overhaul, but there is going to be movement, and we're going to be selling players and bringing players in. So people are playing for the future as well, you know. So it's going to be a big end to the season, really. And let's hope we can get a bit of that positivity and a bit of that momentum back. And this break in Dubai for a bit of warm weather training hopefully will do them good. The majority of the squad will probably be there because not everyone's away on international duty. So, but let's just have a touch on, I kind of debated whether to talk about this or not, because I think it very much is a social media thing, but you know, we're a podcast, and you know, we're on YouTube and we're on Twitter and stuff, so it's relevant to talk about it. But like I said before, we sat on that Leicester podcast when we qualified for the Champions League, me and you, and we said there's going to be challenges next season. It's going to be difficult. There is going to be times when people are calling for Eddie Howe to be sacked. It was my hope that we wouldn't see that, but I didn't realistically think we wouldn't, because that's just the way modern football is now. Every defeat is a disgrace and embarrassment.
Yeah.
Even draws quite often are. I've seen today that Eddie Howe's clueless. He's out of his depth. He's tactically rigid. He's too stubborn and too loyal. And there was actually a poll by someone which Toon Polls retweeted, which was about whether Eddie Howe could build a team to compete for the Champions League qualification again next season. And 65% thought of about 3,500 thought that we could, that he could, and 35% thought he couldn't. So that's still quite a lot of people who seem to have lost faith in the manager, which I think is very disappointing given what he did last season, but also given the work ethic he's got and his obvious quality, which he's displayed time and time again when he has had not such a difficult hand being dealt to him. But I understand the disappointment and the frustration, and I feel it myself after games. It's really that after the Chelsea game was really frustrating, really disappointing. But I think the way quite a few fans are behaving towards Howe is a bit disrespectful now, and it's kind of ignorant of what he's already achieved here. You can't just write off what he did last season or what he did up to December this season. And we have to kind of ask, do we want to be the loyalest football supporters that the world has ever seen, as the song goes? Or do we want to just cast people aside as soon as we run into a bit of trouble? Modern football is a results business. We all know that managers have to get results or they get sacked. But I'm hoping that, and it does seem like the signs are, like, our owners are going to give him an opportunity. They're going to be understanding of what he's been through this season, probably understanding a bit that they didn't do all they could in the summer as well to support him in the transfer window. So I'm firmly in that camp of supporting Eddie and giving him time. And I guess you are too, but how do you kind of feel about it all and what you've seen in the last, maybe not just the last day or so, but the last few months really on social media?
Yeah, it's gone downhill very quickly on social media, from King Eddie, we're going to build him statues, to now a lot of people wanting him out and saying he's out of his depth and That's why he was sacked from Bournemouth and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm firmly in the camp that we need to give Eddie a chance to fix these problems and to fix these problems hopefully over summer with some signings and hopefully not with a revolving door of injuries as well. That would be nice. But the thing that I don't understand from some Newcastle fans, I should say, on social media is we were used to a shit football club for a very, very long time and we were losing a lot of games all the time. And most seasons, if we finished 17th, that was a success and that was deemed to be, yep, we're in the Premier League. That's fantastic. But we've gone to a completely new level, obviously, with the takeover and straight away under Eddie, we turned from a bottom of the table team who looked destined for relegation. We played up until the end of, from January, I think it was, till the end of the season. We were virtually playing like a Champions League team even then in terms of our form and the points we were picking up. So we virtually played for 18 months top four football in terms of the results and the amount of wins and not getting defeated. And yes, we've had a 3 or 4 month period here of struggle, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it's hardly anything that should be, we should be talking about Eddie losing his job. Like I was saying to you before the pod, I think we've turned into a real bunch of sport kids here because we got so used to so much positivity and never losing in a game and never conceding goals. We were so good defensively last season and that was unheard of as well for Newcastle. We're years and years of watching Newcastle play in my lifetime, we just concede 2, 3, 4 goals a game virtually every week. So last year was the anomaly for us. We were very good defensively, never conceded a goal, and now we're back to conceding a lot of goals and the world's caving in. So I'm definitely in the camp that Eddie needs to be given the space and the time, and I think he will be by the ownership. But the fans have to also remember that you can't just judge 2 or 3 months of results and, yet we've been disappointing since December and say, yeah, he's going to be sacked because of the last 3, 4 months. What about the first 3, 4 months when we were still top six? We just smashed PSG at home 4-1. We beat Manchester City with virtually a reserve team at home. We beat Manchester United away from home with a genuine reserve team. I'm not sure what people want from Eddie. Obviously, there's individual decisions that I also think that he's been getting wrong and he needs to obviously learn from those mistakes. But in terms of calling for his job or anything like that, I think that's way off the mark. And I don't think any Newcastle fan really realistically should be even considering that given what has gone before us.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that if we get to this point, let's say that we're 10 games into the new season and we're still leaking goals and we can't win away games and he's picking players who are out of form when he's got a full squad to choose from. Yeah. Let's say that if things like that are happening at that point, then fine, let's have that conversation after he's got better players coming in and he's given an opportunity to learn from what has been a very punishing and challenging season for him in his career as well. But I want us to be a club that supports the manager and backs people who've done a good job and backs good people as well as people who are good at the job as well. I don't want to be a club that just sacks the manager every 5 minutes at the first point of adversity. And I feel like that's the way that a lot of the social media supporters seem to be going that way. They look at someone like Mourinho and say, let's get Mourinho or whoever the flavour of the month might be. You know, it just sort of disrespects everything that Eddie Howe has done up to this point. But that's not to say you can't criticise him and question his decisions, because you absolutely can. And he will do that himself more than anybody else. So let's try and get a bit of form going before the end of the season. And I think if we can do that, it will be a positive. If we can get a couple of maybe signings in early in the summer, I think that'll shift the mood and everyone will be in a good, happy mood again. And that's what we want to see around Newcastle. But it's not always going to be that way. It is going to be hard. And I've seen people saying that, you know, success is not linear. It's a squiggly line. It goes all over the place to get there. And there's going to have to be an element of patience for us to get there. So disappointing game today, but we always seem to do this. We always just come back to it and we're happy. We've always got a good positive attitude. Because
obviously we're not happy. Like, we want to make clear we want to win, obviously, and we want our team to be competing and winning these games. But you have to analyze every situation with context, and you can't just emotionally react. Obviously, during game and maybe straight after the game, everyone's emotional, and I'm sure I say many, many things during a football game that I probably shouldn't. But once you pull down, you move forward and you try and think of perspective, and you try and think of the context of where we are currently as a club. And there's been so much gone before us in terms of how well we've done under Eddie, that he's shown that he can get this side performing really, really well at a really high level. So it would be definitely throwing the baby out with the bathwater to sort of react and say, yeah, this second half of the season has been not good enough, he needs to go. I think that would be, completely wrong.
And the point is, like, logically, he's done it before, so why couldn't he do it again? You know, and fair enough, next time, let's say he's still here and we get in the Champions League again, or we get into Europe again, and he hasn't done it in Europe and the league at the same time. He's struggled with that this season. So let's see how he goes next time, that, and hopefully he gets the opportunity to do that, because that's how you can measure somebody's development and a coach's own growth through how they react to adversity and how they learn from previous mistakes they've made. And nobody's perfect. You know, Arsenal fans were calling for Arteta to be sacked not that long ago. Klopp had a really bad season at Liverpool last season. They stuck with him. Alex Ferguson famously was almost sacked by Man United. So I think we've got something special, actually, with Eddie Howe, someone who's really, really good, and he's a good fit for the club. And like I said, the context is it's been a very difficult season at times. But he absolutely deserves the opportunity to put that right. And let's hope it starts in a couple of weeks. I think we've got Craig and Mark and Bobby are going to do a bit of a look at the run-in and see if they can think about how many points we're going to get. And then I think Mark wanted to do something about fan fatigue, maybe, and you know, a bit like what we've talked about tonight, about the way things have been this season at times. So we'll leave it at that. Everyone's going to have a nice break now. We're not going to Dubai. We're just going to go to work, but there you go. And I'll speak to you soon. Cheers, Demi.
Cheers, mate.
Take it easy.